This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What it basically means at the end of the day is that our company, and we would hope multiple companies in the future as we roll this out, will be able to say that all waste on the planet can be used to put homes over the heads of the disadvantaged around the world. That's my ultimate end game in this, and I know for a fact, without fear of contradiction, that that's possible.
Many people living in Pacific nations like Vanuatu, Indonesia, and the Philippines struggle to find adequate shelter, a challenge compounded by the elevated risk of structure-destroying cyclones. Meanwhile, miles off their coasts, plastic waste floats in the ocean, contaminating the marine food chain and threatening the world's largest ecosystem. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Nev Hyman, an avid surfer who saw these two seemingly unrelated problems and devised a solution. His company, Nev House, uses recycled plastic to build low-cost, fire and cyclone-resistant, solar and water sanitation-equipped houses for people living in developing nations. He tells us about how Nev House partners with charities to actualize their business model, how he feels the emergency shelter system should be streamlined, and how this small company will upcycle 3 million tons of plastic waste over the next 4 years. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Nev Hyman. He's the founder and chairman of Nev House. Nev, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Yeah, my pleasure, Alex. It's excellent. I'm enjoying the moment already.
So Nev House is a really cool idea where you take recycled surfboards and turn them into housing. Why don't you explain where the company is right now and give us kind of the genesis behind the idea?
How it all began was that I spent my life shaping surfboards, surfing around the world, being in pristine waters around the world. And as we all know, it's no new news that there is a lot of plastic waste in the ocean, and we all know about the harm that can do to humanity. And so about 12 or 13 years ago, I decided just to invest in a plastics recycling company, which took 7 coves of plastic and turned it into building products. Whilst we were building the company Firewire Surfboards, prior to that, my company was called Nev Future Shapes, and that evolved into Firewire. So I kind of was one of the founders of Firewire, and that company is now based in Carlsbad in California. It's a global company, and Kelly Slater is now the major shareholder in that company. So it's been an interesting evolution. But to get back to why I started using, or with the idea of using the waste that's in the oceans, the waste that goes to landfill, I thought there's got to be a better way to use that waste, and why not try to build a home for the disadvantaged out of that waste? And that epiphany sort of came about 4 years ago, and we spent the last 4 years developing the whole process to where we are now.
And why don't you explain what the Vanuatu project is and how Nev House plays a part?
Well, our focus was on Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, the Philippines. And up until March of last year, we were about to embark on a program of building some properties in Papua New Guinea. But Cyclone Pam hit Vanuatu, and we were invited to go to Vanuatu and see the devastation and try and figure out whether we could apply what we were planning on doing there. We did. We met with the Prime Minister of Vanuatu. It was an incredible experience to see the damage done. We committed ourselves to rebuilding homes there. Now, that turned into rebuilding schools and medical clinics so that they had safe houses. And the safe houses are more important than homes because people need somewhere to go during a Category 5 cyclone.
Are these houses up and running yet, or is this the plan?
So what happened was we proposed to start building medical clinics and schoolrooms and community centres to provide that safe house scenario. There was and is funding from the Australian government, the New Zealand government, the World Bank, sitting in accounts in Vanuatu, but not released, because the traditional way of solving that problem is to build concrete slab, tinder brick wall, tin roof structures, which don't last when there's no maintenance. They may or may not be able to withstand a hurricane or a cyclone. And they use an incredible amount of water and sand is a premium in the South Pacific, as we probably know. And they take months and months, if not years, to build. So whilst that money's been sitting there, with us being unable to access it, we decided enough's enough. So we were approached by a post-disaster relief charitable organisation based in Hong Kong, who funded a village on the island of Tanna, one of the most remote islands I've ever been to, but only 2.5 hours by flight from Brisbane to that island. But in 8 weeks, we completed 14 structures, community centres, schoolrooms, and a medical clinic with nurses' accommodation in an area where they've never had electricity. It's 100% unemployment. Subsistence people, it's just incredible. The people are so happy. This one island of 40,000 people has one doctor and one terrible clinic that's on the other side of the island. And now, through our efforts and the efforts of the charitable organisation, they have a full community. We're very proud of that. That community will protect 1,200 people in the event of a cyclone, that they'll all cram into those buildings and they will be safe. And but as importantly, their homes are designed to respect the cultural sensitivities of the type of homes that these people would prefer to live in. It's not a Westerner coming in and saying, this is what I think you should have. So we're using the best architects, the best anthropologists, and engaging with the local community, the villagers, to actually provide them with what they have now.
So what makes the materials you work with so much better than the traditional way of emergency housing on these remote islands, Nev?
Well, first of all, there is no emergency housing on these islands. I spoke to the Prime Minister 3 weeks after the cyclone and said, had there been any international company offering support to build short, mid and long-term housing solutions for what they've lost? They lost 80% of their structures. Same with Fiji. It's unbelievable. Now, we come in and we can build a house in 2 to 4 days maximum, or a structure, which would take the government a year to build the same structure in that same environment. And in doing so, huge quantities of sand and water need to be used, which they don't have. So we can come in and build a community in a matter of weeks, when it would take the government months, if not years, to build. The other really important point is that the materials that we're using are... a great percentage, or at least 60% of the house, is made from wood plastic composite and a combination of recycled plastic materials that by nature create a material that is far more impervious to bacteria, to mold, mildew, to damp, all those sorts of things, which cause mortality in slums and in poorly sanitised communities. On top of that, the material will last multi-generations, with very little, if any, maintenance. So, and we all know that in developing nations, maintenance is one of the last things anybody bothers to do. The fact that the properties go up so quickly enables the community to kickstart their lives almost immediately. Whereas at the moment, people are still in Vanuatu 16 months later, living in lean-tos or in aid agency tents, and slowly but surely rebuilt communities haphazardly that in a matter of time will blow down again, or they just look wrong. They don't suit the environment. So if you do actually have a good look at what we're doing, you'll see how our buildings actually fit into the environment also.
And what do you attribute to the disparity in time that it takes for Nev House to put up proper housing versus the governments in some of these places? You say it takes like a year versus a few days. Why the huge disparity?
Well, it's a very good point. Firstly, on the Nev House scenario, this is a modular, flat pack, rapidly deployed, brilliantly designed solution. We just won, and on these accolades go to our architects and engineers, not me. But we just won almost a clean sweep of the Australian Good Design Awards, which are like the Oscars of design in Australia, not just architectural, but all design. The alternate to that is to do what most developing nations do, which is either themselves use the local sand and local water to build a concrete slab and then build the tinder brick walls. And then eventually they may get to the point of putting a tin roof over that structure. And maybe if they follow the local codes, it may withstand a cyclone or a hurricane. But most likely, the use of local labour will compromise that design. And therefore, you have problems with buildings collapsing when they should have withstood a cyclone. And more people died in Vanuatu of collapsing tinder brick walls than being hit by coconuts, etc. And that whole process, as we all see and observe around the world, takes a long time for people to rebuild their homes. And it's just simply not happening. If you go to Fiji at the moment, there's very few homes that have already been rebuilt. When government gets involved without the support of groups like ourselves and other commercial groups, the build becomes slow because it gets caught up in bureaucracy. We cut through the bureaucracy. We use private sector funds to actually come into a community and make a difference. And we've proven that by what we did on Tanner Island. Whilst the government has been sitting on their hands and not releasing the funds that they have in their coffers because they're concerned about how long it will take to actually build the homes, and they have to gather together local tradesmen and all this sort of thing, which is wonderful for providing jobs, but at the end of the day, it becomes a bottleneck and the process of building takes too long. Whereas we can come in and deliver the product to port and have our team and use local labour to build these homes in a matter of days and walk away knowing that the job's finished complete in a particular timescale.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the founder of Nev House, Nev Hyman. So Nev, can you give us more of a breakdown of the materials you use and how it's linked to your background in surfboard shaping?
Sure. I've always been interested in composites. Surfboards are a composite material. They're a combination of resins, polymers, and fibers. And we engaged the best architects and engineers in Australia to design a house that could be built from the use of recycled polymers. We're using a particular and unique recycled plastic polymer in the current application of what we're doing for all of the panels on the floors and the walls, which include all the louvers, etc., on the house. The house is designed for the tropics, in particular this house, to encourage thermal flow through the building. So when it's opened up, the breeze goes through the whole house. And and the materials that we're using can be, if the house flooded or if the house was not looked after over a period of time, you would simply go into the house with a hose or a gurney or something like that, or a scrubber, and just scrub the house out and move back in again, and it will be as it was, as new. So there's no painting, no need for that type of maintenance. The structural members of the house are actually, we're using a sustainable structural timber, and I'm proud of that at this point because that takes carbon out of the atmosphere. Sustainable timber production is not deforestation. It's actually using growing trees is where you take most of the carbon out of the atmosphere. Mature trees don't take a great deal of carbon out of the atmosphere. So we're encouraging that by using this product called laminated veneer lumber, and it's incredibly strong. So we get the structural integrity of the building through the portal frames that the LVL are made from. And then at the moment we're using the highest grade tin roof, or we call it colour bond in Australia. And then we're using screw piles, which are made from galvanised steel. So there is a bit of steel in the structure. It's not 100% solution that I would ultimately want to be, but this is version one of Nev House. Version two is really exciting.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Where do you see this going?
Well, my goal, considering what I observed over the years and seeing so much plastic in the ocean and how that breaks your heart, and that's more of the overview philosophical look at the environment. What do we do to stop that from happening? We have to start using the other codes of plastic that currently aren't necessarily being recycled, or if they are being recycled, it's basically because that waste is being shipped to China or other destinations, but mainly China, and that's a good thing, because that waste is being recycled. And when I say that waste, I'm talking about the other codes of plastic that aren't currently being used, like PET, the clear plastic bottle, HDPE and polypropylene PP, those and LDPE, those codes are currently being recycled all over the world, in developed nations and developing nations. It's being recycled, but all the other stuff goes to landfill or it gets baled and sent off. That's a lot of agricultural waste, a lot of plastic bags, a lot of e-waste. There's so much waste that still goes to landfill. Our solution is we take waste from municipal waste, from what you would call in Australia our green bin. Our yellow bin is where we put all our recyclables, but our green bin still has plastics and other things in it with organics. We can take that waste and turn that into a pellet form and then make the panels of our house from that waste. In the meantime, we're using this other process that takes the other codes of plastic. For example, I've got a sample of this material where they've used Indian maize bags. So all the mountains of rice bags and maize bags have been crushed up into small particles and put inside a high pressure, low heat mold. And then from that, we can create the panels that Nev House are made from. So what it basically means at the end of the day is that our company, and we would hope multiple companies in the future as we roll this out, we'll be able to say that all waste on the planet can be used to put homes over the heads of the disadvantaged around the world. That's my ultimate end game in this. And I know for a fact, without fear of contradiction, that that's possible, because I know of at least two technologies that can do it now. So we're going through the finite element analysis right at the moment with the process that takes the other codes of plastic. And once we get that, we will be changing Nev House into this newer technology. And then secondly, the ultimate end game is to actually forget about all the other waste, because it is being recycled. I'll give you a little analogy. In a lot of places, in India now, in Mumbai, you cannot get the waste trucks to drive down the streets of Mumbai can't pick up any waste, because the local children and young adults are collecting all that waste and recycling everything. The recycling mentality is growing globally, probably faster in the developing nations than it is in the first world, because it's too expensive to actually recycle a lot of these things. The same deal in Indonesia. It's almost impossible to get plastic waste in Jakarta, because everything is taken from the hotel, taken from the home, taken from the village. But all the stuff they can't recycle, they find some way to they're finding ways to recycle it. But in the developing world, a lot of that waste still goes to landfill. So we're working with one of the largest companies in waste management who have got a solution for that waste that actually does go to landfill. And the biggest problem about recycling is, what are you going to turn that into? What is the product at the end of the day? If the product is a building material or a commercial, something that you make from it that you can sell X amount of dollars worth, it may not be enough to convince a corporation to sink the required capital to recycle all of that stuff. But if you're putting 3 to 4 tons of plastic waste into a house that the world needs, 250 million houses are needed every year around the world just to keep up with what's required for people around the world to live in the same level of dignity that we live in.
Not a word was spoke between us. There was a little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is Nev Hyman. He's the CEO of Nev House. Can you break down, without giving too much away, about the next stage of your company? You're a for-profit company, correct?
Yes.
What is the model for providing these emergency houses for indigenous people in remote tropical islands? You had said that you get paid by a charity organization, for example, in Vanuatu, but moving forward, how would that work?
Well, the model is simply this. Most large foundations and corporates around the world realize that companies, charities, need to be sustainable. There's no point in giving and giving and people spending and then things being chewed up in fees and then trying to put your hand out again as a charity to try and do good again. That's wonderful. It's been the model. It's been around for a long time. But the world has woken up to that and realized that to be successful and to be sustainable, a company that is trying to do good must be successful and financial. It has to be. So 2 weeks ago, I was sitting next to Julie Bishop, who is our foreign minister and the head of DFAT. Now, DFAT in Australia are the part of the government that actually provide funds to remote communities all around the world, etc., to try and solve these problems. She said, I'm sick of writing checks to governments or charities and things like that that aren't sustainable. I want to provide capital to, that is the Australian government, to sustainable companies that are providing a sustainable solution. And the sustainable solution means that that community that you've helped will be taught how to fish, not being given the fish. That community will be able to have jobs, generate income, be safe so that the next cyclone comes through or hurricane comes through, they won't have to rebuild it again because it'll still be there. That's what she's talking about. Now, where we're going as a company is that we are a company that aims to make a profit for our shareholders, but we're also, we call it, you know, philanthropic or philanthrocapitalism. So the company is, in our mandate, we are giving 10% of our profit to a charity that is being structured now that will be audited in and audited out. And it's going to be based in Luxembourg. And the reason for that is not tax evasion, so please don't anybody jump up and down about that. This is purely about the Lux stamp, about the ability to be able to set up a vehicle that allows the large foundations globally, the governments globally, the charities to fund these projects, because our project is a scalable project. Whatever we've done in Vanuatu, we could roll out simultaneously across the world, because the supply chains for the materials aren't all coming from one factory. It's not like we have to build the biggest factory in Nevada like Elon Musk is building, which is incredible. We don't have to build one big factory. We can have factories all over the world doing this simultaneously. So we need a vehicle where government can contribute, where foundations can contribute, where huge fees aren't being taken out because our profit, for-profit company will be paying those fees. And that foundation will then be used to fund these multi-billion dollar projects that are going to be required. The International Finance Corporation has billions of dollars at the ready, so does the World Bank, so does the... There's money everywhere to solve these problems, but it must be spent wisely. I was in Tacloban with the mayor of Tacloban City in the Philippines, who intimated to me 9 months after the hurricane that went through there that they had $1.4 billion, I believe, and I'm not sure the exact figure, but it was well over $1 billion. It was pledged to Tacloban But it couldn't be spent because the foundations wouldn't release the funds because they weren't sure that the funds were going to be spent wisely. We're setting up our company to be one of many companies, but we're setting that are doing the same thing, but we're setting up so it will be transparent. So no laundered money can come in and no money will go to a despot. So that's where we're heading as a company. And we believe strongly that the solution to housing globally will be solved by the private sector, by not so much government. We'd like to take that out of the hands of government so that they can put money into infrastructure and education, all those sorts of things. But if the private sector can see a solution that is scalable, that can be delivered rapidly, and that those communities, when they're built, will be there for a long time, then we believe we have that solution.
And with the fragile ecosystem in the South Pacific and with rising oceans and climate change, it would seem like this current model may be quite sustainable for the near future or maybe even longer.
Oh, absolutely. My son and I went to the Kiribati Islands, which are south of Hawaii, north of Tahiti, and 20 foot above sea level, an atoll with 10,000 people living on that atoll. Nothing leaves that island. Everything goes in. They grow nothing. Everything is imported. I met with the minister there who said, your solution could work really well here because our structures are on stilts, you could say, and they're Category 5 rated and all of the above. They could flood if they needed to flood and you just hose it out. But the important thing is that if sea levels rise, we can move that structure back in a matter of days. So literally take the structure down, take the screw piles out, and build it back on higher ground. So whilst we were talking about having the houses and moving them back over to higher ground, in my layman's understanding of what we can do here and my knowledge of sand pumping and things like that, on the Gold Coast, they've pumped millions and millions of tons of sand on the beach and it's been there for 20 years. They're building sand islands in the South China Sea, the Chinese government are. There is no reason why sand could not be pumped onto that little atoll and move the houses back onto higher ground to have a energy system that takes all of the waste from that island, from all those people, and turns it into an agricultural fertilizer and put soil back on that and grow vegetables and have greenhouses and do all the things that they're not doing. To me, it's a no-brainer. I know we've got the technology. It's simple. The governments of the world are looking at islands like in the Kiribati going, we need to find a solution. The president of the Kiribati was at the Global Climate Change in Paris when I was sitting with the minister on Christmas Island. And we were talking about it, and they're talking about moving their people into Fiji. It's unbelievable. But I believe we've got a solution. And all we need is the large companies around the world to consider what they need to do. And I'll give you one example of what this is about. I've got a meeting coming up with the WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, who are the largest facilitator of bringing corporates and greenies together to provide solutions. I'm meeting with 30 of the top companies in Australia from the mining, banking sector, etc., all around the country, to talk about how do they spend their corporate social responsibility programs? How do they spend the money that they know they have in their kitties to help communities that they have an impact in or take from? The ANZ Bank have a huge amount of money at their fingertips to be able to use because they're one of the biggest banks in the South Pacific. Mm-hmm. We know what they can use what they can do with that money. They can rebuild communities that are completely off the grid, completely sustainable, that provide jobs, and those communities will be there in 100 years' time. That's what we know that they can do, and that's the start of sustainability.
It's a really cool idea, Nev, and I urge our listeners to go to your website and learn more at nevhouse.com. Nev Hyman, thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Dick Dale, Dave Myers and the Surf Tones, and Bob Dylan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.